Hugh, and good morning, everyone. And just thanks to Lily for setting the scene. We're trying to implement some of the things that she's been teaching, and if I don't put it into my presentation, the things that we're most successful at is when the community asks us to do the things that we already want to do. So when the community can come and ask the legislature for us to do an income and health report, it adds a lot of power. We wanted to do it all the time, but if they bring it forward, that inside-outside game is really powerful. So I don't have any conflicts that I know of. But since this is the spirit of 1848, it's always, you know, you think about history, and this is a big day in history. This highlights, you know, all these are all of the presidents that were elected, and the fact that first African-American was elected on this day in 1868. And it highlights the fact that, in my view, the greatest public health achievement of the 20th century was the 19th Amendment, women's right to vote. Biggest public health achievement. It's so health in all policies, and policies are made that really change the world. It's also the birthday of William Cullen Bryant, and he said, "Weep not that the world changes, that it keeps stable, changeless state, it were cause to indeed to weep." The problem is, you know, so it's always changing, and if, you know, it's supposed to change, and it happens to change. But since I've been in medical care and health care, the change has been in the wrong direction. Right from the time I graduated from medical school in 1972 and really got into governmental public health in 1980. Just some examples. You can look at life expectancy in this country compared to OECD countries, both for males and females. So starting right around, you know, the mid-70s, and particularly in 1980, we started to change in terms of our relationship to the OECD countries, where we started to slow, our rates started to slow. Also, our infant mortality rate, where I've been working on this, excuse me, for all my professional career, you know, our ranking internationally has dropped steadily. So change is occurring, but it's not going in the direction that we want it to go. And certainly, the disparities that we have in this country are also going in the wrong direction. Increasing disparities, particularly compared to other countries, and it really struck me that, you know, in 2010, the longevity of African Americans finally reached the longevity of white Americans in 1980. You're talking 30 years to make that difference. And this is the one that really has stimulated me. I entered governmental public health in 1980, running a maternal and child health program in the city of Minneapolis, and infant mortality was the issue we dealt with, particularly disparities. And then after 15 years with the city, went into the university for 16 years, then came back to governmental public health in 2011 as state health commissioner. And it struck me, so these are national data, but the Minnesota data are exactly the same, that in 2011, the African-American infant mortality rate still had not reached the white infant mortality rate in 1980. So that really struck me as all of this work that we've done has really not been successful. And it really struck me when I looked at those disparities. You can see that the line going up is the disparity, the black-white infant mortality disparity. And you can see where that starts to pick up in the 70s and 80s, where we changed the narrative at that point in time about what creates health. We changed our investment strategy. We changed policies that have made a huge difference, not only in disparities, but amazingly, also in our costs. It's really around that same time that when our disparities started to increase, our cost, healthcare costs arose, started to rise and move in a different direction than the rest of the world. And part of the reason was talking about that narrative. You know, we had the narrative that if you just had good medical care and individuals just made the right choice, we would be healthy. So we put all of our investment in individual behavior change and most of our investment in medical care. And it caused our costs to go up, our longevity improvements to slow, our infant mortality rate to slow, and our disparities to increase. So what have we done? We've tried to change that, and we've developed the triple aim of healthcare: better care for individuals, lower per capita costs, better health for populations. And you know, that's a good approach, and it's actually making some changes in the healthcare field. But by itself. The triple aim of healthcare actually could be detrimental to health unless it's partnered with another approach to balance off this focus on healthcare. So, because the triple aim of healthcare is actually an individual health model, it is not a community health model. It really thinks of individuals that they can be healthy independent of their community. And we know that that's not true, that health has to be thought about in community. And we also found out that what's good for health care is not necessarily what's best for communities or advancing health care. You know, what's best for health care is that we have lots of specialists, not primary care docs, that we have get rid of critical access hospitals because they're not really, really effective and they're not really economic, good models. But they're good community models, but they're maybe not good for the healthcare system. Think of the community benefit programs. Where do the investments, what's good for healthcare from those community investment dollars may not necessarily be best for the communities, depending on who's at the table. So I believe that healthcare has been made the benevolent dictator of health, that all health is viewed through that healthcare lens. It assumes, particularly that one that says, you know, improve population health, which is really population medicine that they're talking about, but it assumes that healthcare is responsible for population health. And it reinforces the narrative about what creates health, that it's about medical care. That's what really improves health. And it particularly dictates where the investments are made. So I believe we need to balance that with a triple aim of health equity. And so this is what we put together in Minnesota. This is what we're using as the framework for our strategic planning for our health department. Our strategic plan for the next 5 years is going to be built on this triple aim of health equity. This is also the challenge that I've, as president of ASTO, you get to do a presidential challenge. And this is the challenge that I'm making to my colleagues throughout the state, that we expand our understanding of what creates health. We implement a health and all policies approach with health equity as the goal. And we strengthen the capacity of communities to create their own healthy future. And I'll briefly go through those. Let's expand. And it's all built around the fact social cohesion, that we have to have connections. We have to have relationships. We have to have that social glue that keeps us working. And so expand the understanding about what creates health. We have to change the narrative. We have to tell the story different. We have to have people understand that it's not just about medical care. Yes, medical care is important. I want to have the best medical care system in the world and have very few people have to use it. So we know that the socioeconomic factors, according to this model, are 40%, 30% behaviors. But we also know that those behaviors really are impacted by their community. And I'll get to that in just a second. But that whole framework of what creates health is really still around what that individual. But we have to embed that into the community. We know that all of the aspects of a community are really important. Health is community. And I like Wendell Berry's quotation, the poet from Kentucky said, "The community, in the fullest sense, is the smallest unit of health. To speak of the health of an isolated individual is a contradiction in terms." So we have to really be aware of all of these things. This is the health and all policies approach. Individuals are in communities. And I talked about those behaviors, 30% are behaviors. But think about the communities of opportunity that are outlined there, the low opportunity communities. If you live in a community of opportunity, it's easy for you to make a healthy choice. If you live in a low opportunity community, it's impossible to make a healthy choice. We want to make sure that, you know, we talk about making the healthy choice the easy choice. We want to make the healthy choice a possible choice. So this is where we really need to focus on communities. Secondly, we need to strengthen the capacity of communities to create their own healthy future. We need to really, through this framework, we have to move from that right side where we talk about people who are afflicted with some complication, moving them to the left, to the afflicted without complications, to the vulnerable population. So on the right is where we do a lot of primary, secondary, tertiary prevention. That's where our primary care is, where our secondary care is. And this is the area where medical care and public health have traditionally dealt with. We want to keep people, vulnerable populations from becoming ill. But what we really need to do is move further upstream to that safe and vulnerable, to safe and healthier communities. This is where we need to do a lot of work, and that is actually the community capacity. It's building democracy. It's building power within communities. It's building mutual accountability. It's the stuff that Lilly is trying to teach their cohorts. It's all of those civic skills that are so important if we're going to be creating healthy communities. That's why community capacity is so important. And so we're using the World Health Organization framework for social determinants that I hope most of you know about. And certainly we want the triple aim of health care to work on this right side where the individual and his or her circumstances need to be the focus. But we in public health really need to move further upstream and really look at those socioeconomic policies in a larger political context. And this is not a new concept. You know, like I talked about history at the beginning. 100 years ago this year, the Welch Rose Report was put out, which laid the foundation for the schools of public health. And Abraham Flexner was part of that conversation. And this is what he said about physicians towards the end of this statement. You know, the physician's function is to be factoring social and preventive rather than individual and curative. And that these matters, he outlines the kind of environmental conditions, are matters for social regulation, and doctors have the duty to promote social conditions that are conducive to physical well-being. It was understood back in 1915 that medical care and public health had to focus on social conditions. And also C.E.A. Winslow at that time, the dean of the School of Public Health at Yale, you know, certainly had in his definition of public health back in 1920, said public health had to be an organized community effort for sanitation, dealing with sanitation, communicable diseases, education, organization, development of the social machinery to assure everyone a standard of living adequate for the maintenance of health, so organize these benefits as to enable every citizen to realize his birthright of health and longevity. It really was, public health really is a social justice issue, has been mentioned, and dealing with the social conditions. Just briefly in my last minute, talking about, just to highlight the fact that some of the greatest disparities in this country are in the states outlined here. And these are states where Big Ten universities are, Big Ten institutions. And so I've met with all of the provosts from all of those Big Ten schools to say you need to focus on social determinants of health, because that's what large research institutions really should be dealing with, particularly the land-grant institutions. Many of these are land-grant institutions. And the mission of a land-grant institution is to address issues created by changing economic conditions and social class. That was a charge given to them in 1862, and that is still the charge for land-grant institutions. So we have a collaborative funded by RWJF and Kellogg to really put together a collaboration between state health departments and universities in those Big Ten states to address social determinants of health, so stay tuned to that. So in our health department, you know, we're using a lot of the tools that the community asks us to do. So we put together a income and health report that will help pass the minimum wage in Minnesota, which I believe in the 4 years that I've been health commissioner, passing that minimum wage is the biggest public health achievement that we had. It improved longevity from the people at the lowest income level by 3.5 years. Huge benefit. We're doing a lot of work on race, ethnicity, and language data, adding health equity into our statewide health assessment and our state health improvement plans, and we're doing a broad community engagement strategy with all of our staff. So when we're looking at how we're going to frame the world that we work in, yes, medical care is important. It has a lot, has most of the dollars. We need to work with that, and that's why I really do support the triple aim of healthcare working in the medical community. But I don't want medical care to be in charge of health. I actually don't want public health to be in charge of health. I want the community to be in charge of health. And so we need to be partners with the community. And so I'm seeing how we can have that institute of the IHI, triple aim of health equity on the right side, working on improving what they're doing. But we need to focus on that triple aim of health equity that overarches everything. So thank you for this opportunity to talk with you.